immediately was like, are you still a Christian? I'm like, here we go. Here it comes. My response is yes, but I don't think in the same way you call yourself a Christian.
Welcome to The Dismantle, creating community, not converts.
Hello and welcome to Dismantle Podcast, a place for community, not converts. I'm your host, Joey. On this show, we attempt to dismantle an issue that poses as problematic for the church by having a discussion with a guest who has insight or experience with that subject. Now, if you're new to the show, we're not always going to agree, and that's okay, but we're not going to argue because our goal is to build bridges and not barriers. And our guest today is Ethan Luck. Ethan, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks. I thought I was ready to argue.
You're ready to argue? I mean, we still can.
Damn it, Joey. No, I love that intro. Just a discussion, not an argument, you know. I love it already.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. And I'm glad you got to be a part of that conversation. I'm excited for this discussion. Before we dive into it, for our listeners who might know your name but not really familiar, give us a little bit about who you are, where you are, and some of the work you do.
Yeah, man. Well, I mean, most people know me just from being in a bunch of bands over the years, you know. I guess the majority of them in kind of the Christian music world, even though a lot of it was kind of crossover as well. But yeah, I played in bands like the Dingies, the Supertones, Reliant K, Demon Hunter. And in the last, 8 years or something like that, I haven't really been a member of any bands. I've just been a touring musician or touring tech. You know, I toured with a band called Need to Breathe for a tour, toured with Kings of Leon, a bunch of different people, you know. I live in Nashville, so that's kind of a common thing here is when you're not in a band, you're usually always looking for a gig touring with somebody. And I guess the common misconception is that if I'm on the road with a band, the thought is, oh, he's in that band, but it's not the case. It's usually just I'm a touring member, as in, you know, you're just a hired gun. You're there for maybe the tour, maybe for a couple of years, maybe for a long time. But yeah, that's kind of what I do. And I do a bunch of session work in town. Primarily at my friend's studio called The Smokestack, and playing other people's records. And all that to say is that basically I'm still just heavily involved in music.
That's awesome. Now, did you always want to be involved in music? Like, did you grow up in the Nashville area, or was that something that you pursued later on?
No, it was, I mean, I pursued it. I grew up in California, in Southern California. And I lived there till I was probably 22. And then I moved to Nashville for 2 years because two of the guys in my old band, the Supertones, lived here. And I just wanted to try something out, try something new. And yeah, man, I just, from a young age, I knew I was into music, obsessed with music. I started playing guitar when I was 11, learned how to play drums and bass along the way, just because I had other friends, you know, whether it was at church or school or whatever, that also played other instruments. So we would like teach each other what we were learning on our music lessons or whatever. And I don't think it was until I was probably in my late teens, early 20s that I realized, oh, maybe this could be a living, like an actual job. Because, you know, most musicians, you know, we all, touring musicians especially, all know that, like, you might be in a band, you might be on the road doing whatever, but you always got to fill the time in between with other jobs. And some of those jobs suck and some of those jobs are cool. But at the end of the day, the constant goal is still to do music in some fashion, whether that's on the road or in the studio or at home even, you know, writing, things like that. So, yeah, I don't know. It clicked for me at some point, I would say probably in, like, late 99, early 2000, when I started touring like full time. Cause I've been touring since basically 98. Mm. And, yeah, I think it was when I was playing in the Supertones when I came in and recorded a record for them, just as their friend. And I used to play with those guys when I was like a teenager. So they kind of brought me back in to play on this one record. And all of a sudden I started playing some festivals with them and they were paying really well. And I was like, wow, I think this could actually be a job. And so that I kind of didn't look back at that point. And here I am at age 42, still doing the same thing.
It's crazy. Now, you know, given the longevity of your career within and outside of, you know, Christian music, what we'd call contemporary Christian music or CCM, what was it like when you first got into that? And, you know, what has been some of the changes, the evolution that you've seen from your perspective as time has gone on? Has it been consistent? Are there still elements that are familiar, or is it drastically different from the 90s when you started?
I mean, I'll say right away, I think it's drastically different from the 90s and maybe early 2000s.
Okay.
In regards to like the Christian music industry, I think it, I don't know. I don't think that excitement that was there with the label, like Tooth and Nail, for instance, I don't think that excitement really exists as much anymore. It might personally for certain people, maybe if they're younger and getting into certain bands. But back then, man, it was something so new that Tooth and Nail Records put out in the world. It wasn't like your mom and dad's Christian music or like the band your pastor is recommending or even kids at your youth group. You know, like when I was going to church, you know, in junior high and high school, it was like, you know, everyone else was like, oh, we're going to go see Petra this weekend. And then they would play me a Petra tape or CD. And I'm like, this is bad. I don't like this stuff, you know? And then years ago, man, my cousin, who his name is Matt Wignall, he was in a band on Tooth and Nail as well called Javelina Rail Company. He worked for Brandon Ebel back in the 90s when he was still based in California. And he just started giving me CDs and t-shirts like for my birthday and Christmas, like from the label. And that kind of blew the door open for me where I was like, wow, there's other bands out there that are, you know, quote unquote Christian that doesn't sound like the stuff that people at church are recommending. And it was like, it was just cool. It was something different. And it was like, wow, this band sounds like Rancid, or this sounds like Operation Ivy, or whatever bands you're into, or metal bands and stuff like that. And I started going to shows locally in Orange County, and just my mind was just blown that there was this stuff. Like there'd be like these church shows, but it didn't feel like this conservative gathering of people, you know, in pews or anything like that. It was like a rock show, but it just happened to be in a church and people were going crazy and, you know, moshing and stage diving. I was like, dude, this is insane. It was like nothing I ever experienced. You know, I was doing that as well as going to, you know, as they say, secular shows. And you know, like in high school and stuff like that, when I was getting into, you know, punk rock and reggae and ska music and stuff like that. So I started going to shows like Real Big Fish and Save Ferris and Fishbone and all these bands, No Doubt and stuff like that, when they were still kind of a small band. And yeah, it was just an exciting time, I think, back then. And a lot of it has to do with your age, I think. But I don't know. I just don't think that thing exists as much anymore, because what that label did, in my opinion, was put out stuff that was so good all the time, no matter what band it was, no matter what genre, that everyone that was into it bought it all. It was like, oh, MXPX put out this new record and that's awesome, I'm going to buy it. And then, you know, this other metal band would do the same thing. You'd buy that. Like, it didn't matter what genre it was or who, where they were from or anything. It was Tooth and Nail. It was just, I don't know. It was exciting back then. And they're still around. I just don't think that Christian music industry has that kind of spark maybe that it used to. It was just, like I said before, it was refreshing. It was new. It wasn't your parents' stuff, you know, and I don't know, a lot of stuff's still out there, but I think, you know, a lot of it just, the Christian music industry has become this massive, what it is, an industry, you know? So where now you've got these worship bands that are doing like arena tours and stuff like that, which is just mind blowing. So yeah. And you know, I don't know a lot about that world anymore as far as like the worship bands doing tours like that. But it just seems insane to me that it went from, you know, just like this new thing that was coming out that wasn't Stryper and Petra and all those bands, and to all of a sudden, you know, here we are now where it's like a multi probably billion-dollar industry at this point. Maybe not billion. I don't know. I haven't really been in that world in a while. So
you might be right. And I think, which was going to be my next question, do you think that the worship craze of the early aughts, you know, when Hillsong came out, and then you've got Bethel and, you know, Elevation, yeah, all these people doing, like what you said, studio tours and, you know, making records, you know, they're more aimed at the church, and yet the average consumer can appreciate them the way that you would with a Tooth and Nail. Do you think that sort of, not put the nail in the coffin, but definitely changed the game?
Yeah, I think it probably changed it a bit. Yeah, I don't know. I personally have never really been a huge fan of like worship music. I guess it's kind of a genre now, you know. I don't know. There's always been a joke within that Christian music, you know, industry and with bands that you've toured with and stuff, that like a lot of times, like the Christian version is just not as good as the regular version. It's like, you know, Diet Coke compared to Coke. I don't know. I've just, ever since I got out of high school, cause I used to play music at my church and stuff like that. And even in my college group a little bit until I started touring full time. And then I never really did that anymore. And I don't know. I just, every time I hear anything that is categorized as worship music, it all sounds very bland and boring to me. And I know it has its place. I know that people are impacted by it and people are touched by it. And the same way that, you know, I might be impacted by, you know, an Iron Maiden record, you know, or something like that. Like, music is that powerful in all forms, is that it can change people's lives. Of course, as a musician and as someone that writes songs and has been in bands and has been touring now since 98, it just all, you know, often always sounds the same to me, and it just sounds kind of bland and boring. And I feel like if musicians are given these talents by God, that I feel like the quality could be better. That's what I'm saying.
Totally.
I'm not trying to dog it. I know a lot of people love that stuff, and it's clear because, you know, groups like Hillsong will sell out arenas and stuff like that. I know people love it and stuff like that, but I don't know. There's just a bland element to it that has always kind of been there. Even when I was in the Supertones and we'd been playing these big Christian music festivals like Creation or Cornerstone or whatever. And, you know, there'd be the worship band playing like before us or whatever, on the other stage across the field. And it always just kind of sounded the same. It was very formulaic, I guess is what I'm getting at, you know? And it always kind of followed the trend of secular music. It's like when U2 was the biggest band in the world, which, I mean, they're still massive, but at one point, like everyone in the church was like, every guitar player was getting a delay pedal with a dotted eighth note setting to sound like the Edge. And like, you know, and then it was like maybe a little bit of Coldplay influence in the early 2000s and stuff like that. So it's always kind of evolving with what I think the trends are in a way. It just never was my thing, man. I always saw it from afar at festivals and heard stuff, maybe if I'm flipping radio stations or whatever. And it never really like impacted me like other kinds of music ever has, you know?
Totally. Now, what's interesting is that even though we're having this conversation about the evolving of the CCM scene and how it's changed, how the music just isn't very interesting and it's a little bit bland, your name seems to be within bands and things that would at least be found under a Christian label.
Yeah.
Which we could dive into whatever the hell that means anymore. But, you know, you've always sort of been involved with people like Relient K, Demon Hunter, Supertones, and so much more, which I'm just blown away by your catalog. Has there always been an effort to consciously be a part of that, or that's just your crew? That's who you know?
Yeah, there was never a plan put in place for me to be like, I'm going to stay in the Christian music industry at all. It's just, you know, as a musician, it's like, you know, all I want to do is play and tour and create and record and all that stuff. And you know, like you said, it has to do a lot with who you know initially. It's like, you know, when the Supertones thing was happening, it was like, well, I already knew those dudes since I was 15 years old. And one day I just got a phone call that like, hey, we needed someone to come in, you know, our guitar player is out of the band. We need somebody to come record on this record. I'm like, cool, I'll do it. You know? So it's just circumstantial. That's just how it happened, you know? And even, you know, when I was in the Supertones, that's how I met the dudes in Relient K like 8 years before I even joined that band, you know? And it's just timing. It's just, you know, who you know, and that's how it works out, you know? And there, you know, honestly, there's a lot of people that have come from the CCM world, either as musicians or crew members or whatever, that end up in like the country world or whatever. You know, like I ended up touring with Kings of Leon for years and years, you know, just because a dude I knew was their utility musician, like the touring member in the background, who used to be in this, you know, somewhat CCM band called Luna Halo at one point. So we, you know what I mean? It all just kind of connects. It's at a certain point in the, like, you know, the common factor is just, it's music, you know, and it brings people together, and that makes friendships and relationships, and it'll take you to down different roads you would never expect to go. You know, when I was playing with the Supertones, I never expected I would travel the world and see like 40 countries with a band like Kings of Leon. You know, it's just crazy.
Yeah. Now you do solo material as well. You've got your podcast, like you mentioned, but you're also aiding with these other musicians in ways that are not as visible when you think of these bands, right? You think of a band and you think the lead singer, you think maybe the lead guitarist, you know, the drummer, and yet you've got writing credits, producing, playing on all these other records. And in my personal opinion, which I hope you take this as a compliment, okay, the band is always better when you're in it. Like, I love Relient K's early stuff, but there's a definite shift when you were drumming with it. Oh, there's cool. A definite shift when you were involved with Demon Hunter. Like, it's noticeable. And maybe that's just because I am a musician and I understand the dynamics.
Yeah.
But, you know, is that the philosophy that you've taken that, you know, wherever you are, you're just going to make the thing as best as you can?
I mean, yeah, that is true. I mean, I go into anything basically like, hey, I'm going to learn the material. If I'm, for instance, going in and playing for a band or playing on someone's record, like I'm going to learn the material from the demos that you sent me. So when we go in the studio, we can knock it out and get it right. But I'm also bringing my own personality in there. I'm bringing my own playing style in there. Maybe my own ideas and suggestions for parts on records and stuff like that, or parts on songs. So yeah, I mean, there's a lot of me that goes into anything I record on, whether that's a band I've been a member of, or just literally a one day session, you know. Like I did a session for this girl named Bridget Ryan, who's this newer artist, probably in the early 20s. She's awesome. And she's been putting out these singles that we did at my buddy Paul Moak's studio last October. And they're really good. And it's like, you know, it's not super similar to a lot of stuff I've recorded. It's pretty laid back and mellow. And I did, you know, I mainly played bass and like lap steel guitar on it. And yeah, just ended up having some fun with it. And to, you know, to the point where like all the lap steel stuff I did, it was like very ambient, like tons of reverb. This girl, Bridget, was like freaking out. She's like, dude, please do that on every single song. So like, those are just little elements that I'll bring in and have these ideas. And just, you know, it's just in a way, it's just trying to put my thumbprint on it a little bit, you know, but like you mentioned earlier, it's like when you're doing stuff like this, you're just behind the scenes. It's like, you know, most people aren't going to know that I played on this girl's 4-song EP, you know what I mean? So, but yeah, I mean, I guess back to your initial point is like, I just go into it prepared and ready to throw out my own ideas. And, cause you know, music's best when it's collaborative. And I think that's where I probably shine the most, you know, when I'm working with other people and ideas are getting thrown around the room and stuff like that. You know, I definitely work way faster that way than I do when I write my own songs, because it's just me by myself in my studio with nobody to you know, say, does that suck or is that awesome, you know?
Right. And, you know, do you ever have any hesitancy, like walking in and, you know, trying to be a part of the already existing dynamic? Or is it more like, hey, if it's not a good idea, I'll just move on?
Yeah, probably the latter. I mean, especially, you know, when you're in the studio, it's like their ideas can get thrown out, but at a certain point, you know, sometimes you're just, you know, beating a dead horse. So at that point, you're like, man, we keep trying this and we keep trying this and it's just not working. Even though in our minds, it's like, man, this should work, you know? And then sometimes you just got to move on and let that idea kind of put it on the back burner for a while. And then sometimes, you know, like literally a day or two later, all of a sudden that idea will pop back up and it's like, you know what? I think that works now because we've now added this part and this section and blah, blah, blah. So yeah, I mean, that's what's great about being in the studio a lot is the creative process. I mean, you can go anywhere, you know? And there's times where, excuse me, where you literally are in there, you know, they hand you charts. It's like, hey, the songs go like this. It's pretty straightforward. Let's just knock it out, you know? And this is what the artist wants. And that might feel a little more boring in a way, or just less creative. You know, music's always fun. It's never necessarily boring, but yeah, I mean, I've been lucky though for, you know, almost everything I've recorded on between bands I've been in or just session work I've done that it's always been fun. It's, you know, there's always going to be some kind of struggles in the studio, especially when you're in a band as members, you know, you're like a family at that point. So there's going to be arguments, there's going to be disagreements and things like that, but I don't know. I mean, there's not a lot of times in the studio I can look back on and think like, man, that was miserable. You know, like it's, I don't know if I could really name one that was just awful. You know, it's always been really fun ever since I first, you know, did my first full length record when I was 18, 19 years old.
Yeah. That's awesome. Now, maybe this is a stretch, but I'm going to try and make it anyway. I sort of see this parallel with your accomplishments, your resume, and what people sometimes could be doing with church. They're okay. Trying not to get the glory. They're trying to just make the place better wherever they happen to be. And maybe that's different environments. Maybe that's just one environment. But, you know, can you speak to some of that dynamic that a lot of people, unfortunately, just sort of look around at their situations and decide, well, this isn't for me and I'm not going to pour into it. And so I'm just going to move on to the next thing.
Right. yeah, I don't know. I mean, I definitely try to not go into things selfishly, I guess, you know, I don't know, like I said before, like, you know, when music for the most part should be collaborative. It's not always, of course, there's a lot of people that write by themselves a ton, but it's always better when it's collaborative, you know, and that's that can be a challenge for some people, is to go into a studio and, like, you know, everyone, hey, you know, drop your ego at the front door. Like, we're all in this together. We're all working on the same project, you know? And I don't know. So I would feel really uncomfortable to take any glory from anything that I recorded on, you know. Like, I'll be proud of things, you know, I think that's okay. There's certain stuff I'll listen back to and I'm like, man, I'm still proud of that after all these years. I think that we did a great job, or the artist wrote some great songs and we were able to put some great tracks behind that artist's vocal and ideas. So, yeah, I don't know if I'm answering your question.
No,
how
totally.
You were hoping, but, yeah, I mean, I love recording. I love music and I always like to be looking forward, you know, because I never know what's next.
Well, I think that's the interesting part, and you know, maybe you're answering it without answering it, but like, your focus is super clear. Like, you're not in it to do all this other glamorous shit. It's like, I love music, and so this is what I'm going to focus on.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I think that can be evident maybe even in my solo releases too, because I've put out 4 EPs of full length, and by the end of summer putting out another full length of instrumental stuff, and like, most of my stuff sounds different from the last thing, just because. Not that I'm like, you know, distracted and trying to do something else or trying to reinvent anything. I just, you know, I'm a multi-instrumentalist. I'm into so many different kinds of genres of music and, you know, bands and styles, all that stuff. I don't know. I feel like I can't stay in one place forever, you know, and some artists can do that and it works great. But, and I don't, you know, I don't make a living off my solo music, like, not even by a long shot. I don't even know if I could pay 1 month's rent or bills with what I make with my solo music, but I don't care because it's my passion. It's what I love to do. And, you know, that's always kind of been like my side job is doing my own music. So, I don't know. I like to, like I said, just keep looking forward and trying new things. And, you know, like this instrumental thing I'm doing, it's like, I've always loved surf music and Western music and instrumental stuff. And my dad got me into that stuff when I was young. And a few months back, I'm like, I've written a couple like surf songs here and there, but I've never really like sat down and really written all this kind of stuff. And so I said, screw it, I'm going to do it. And I did.
So what's that process like for you as you're, you know, just solo focused on your stuff, as opposed to like walking in with sheets and instructions and things like that, you know, having all these different sorts of elements of influence, what's mm-hmm. it like when it's just you?
Well, I'll say this, writing an instrumental record is way easier than writing one with lyrics. Obviously, if anyone writes songs out there, I mean, at least for me, lyrics take forever. It's, you know, it's a muscle that needs to be developed. And I've just, because of all the years of touring with other bands, I was never the singer in any band. I was just, you know, the side guy or the whatever, drummer, guitar player or something. And so, so writing an instrumental record was awesome. Cause I'd come up with these cool melodies on guitar and just add a shit ton of reverb to it and make it, you know, like real surfy sounding. And a lot of writing those kind of songs to me were just sitting in my studio and just like turning an amp on and clicking a reverb pedal on and just sitting there and just kind of like noodling around and just goofing off, like while I'm watching something on YouTube or whatever. And then all of a sudden a little idea sparks out. I'm like, oh, that's cool. So then I shut down YouTube and I open up Logic and start programming the drum track and just building it from there. It was honestly like, I wrote everything pretty fast. I mean, it only took a couple months to write 12 songs, which never happens to me when it comes to lyrics. You know, my last record was like a reggae record I did. And I think that whole thing took me like 2 years to write, you know, it's just cause I'm not quick with lyrics, you know. Music I can write fast, you know, all day long, but yeah, lyrics, man, they take so long for me, just, you know, in comparison to, you know, friends of mine who've been writing their own songs for 20, 30 years. And to them, it's like, you know, they could go, I literally have a friend that will go mow the lawn and he'll like have a song in his head. And by the time he's done mowing the lawn, he'll have like lyric ideas and everything just in his head. And then he'll go demo it in like an hour. It blows my mind. I wish I could do that, but I can't.
Insane. So, you know, you've been around the music scene, you've seen it progress, you've seen it evolve. You know, what's your is there an optimism to what, you know, used to be CCM? I don't want to say used to, because it's not dead, but
no,
do you have any insight or future as to where you think it's headed?
I don't, man. I mean, I feel like I'm not the one to predict, you know, success or whatnot of a genre or
because I really wanted to hear, oh yeah, Tooth and Nail's making a comeback.
I mean, look, Tooth and Nail's still around. You know, I don't really keep up with who's on the label and things like that. Like, I know that, you know, sometimes a couple older bands will like re-sign for a record. Like, I know Slick Shoes just released something not too long ago and stuff like that. But I don't know, man. It's just, you know, a lot of those festivals that used to exist that really, I think, it made all those records you bought from Tooth and Nail, for instance, it made all that, you know, real, because then you could go see those bands. And at one point at the Cornerstone Festival, for instance, they had a Tooth and Nail day, and it was like this exciting day where it's like all these Tooth and Nail bands you love, you could see them on one day. It was so cool. And like, you know, and I know that the last time I was probably playing Christian music festivals was probably in, you know, maybe 2011, 12. So there were still some cool ones out there. There's one down in Florida at Universal Studios called Rock the Universe, and that was always super fun. The crowd was always great and really, really well put together, you know. I don't know. I mean, I could be wrong on this, but it felt like at one point the festival world got really bloated, where there was all these big ones like Creation Festival and Cornerstone and whatnot, and there's one called Alive and whatever. But there was just so many of these smaller ones where it was just like too much. And like, you know, we would go play these things and it, like, you know, poorly run, poorly attended. Someone is getting in over their head and they're going to lose their house on this thing because, you know, they didn't plan it out right and stuff like that. And you're just, you know, it's your job to go play music. You're like, hey, this is our living. We have to make money. Like, sorry, we can't cut you a deal because you planned this thing poorly. So yeah, but I think maybe the festival world had, you know, a lot of this going away. Maybe had something to do with it really not being the same scene as it used to be. And you know, I don't know where it could go. I mean, I hope that it becomes exciting again. You know, I really do. There's some stuff that I've heard where I'm like, yeah, that's pretty cool, you know, and maybe it's just cause I'm older and like, I've heard so many styles of music that, you know, but I don't know. I'll say this, like in the secular world, which by the way, for years and years and years, I always hate that there's a Christian in a secular world. You know what I mean?
Totally.
It's all music to me, you know? And I think, you know, if you are someone who believes that music and the abilities to play music come from God, then that applies to secular artists as well, you know? And so, yeah, anyways, all I have to say is that, I don't know, I hope that it becomes exciting again, you know? A lot of the stuff over the years to me is just kind of like, all right, well, that's kind of the same thing that so-and-so's been doing forever. And there was, and even back in the 90s and early 2000s, there was still that thing where like the Christian artists would copy the secular artists, like, oh, we got to sound like the Offspring or Green Day or whoever, you know, back then. And I don't know. I think that, you know, I think Christians should be more original, you know, put stuff out there that is challenging to people. And whether that's lyrically or musically or visually, you know, stuff that, you know, is going to kind of throw people back like, wow, this is like really different, you know? And I think the bands that have done that over the years are the ones that ended up like crossing over, you know, like Switchfoot or something, you know, those guys really didn't sound like anybody else, you know, especially when their first couple records, when I first got to know those dudes, it's like, I don't know any other bands that really sound like Switchfoot, you know, but then you'll get a bunch of Christian bands that start to sound like Switchfoot, you know? So,
right.
But yeah, man.
Yeah.
Go ahead, sir.
No, I was going to say it's crazy how that is sort of the trend. At least to say, hey, this is working, or at least this has commercial success, and therefore we should emulate it.
Yeah, absolutely. And don't get me wrong. I mean, that formula works in country music and pop music, all that stuff. I mean, look at like, you know, back in the early 90s when, you know, you had the Seattle explosion with Alice in Chains and Pearl Jam and Soundgarden, Nirvana, you know, the Meat Puppets, all these bands. All of a sudden you had a bunch of caffeine-free diet soda versions of all those bands that were coming out. Like, you know, it happens in every music industry. Sure. But I just felt like the Christian music industry was maybe a little bit more blatant about it, I guess you could say. You know, they really, you know, I remember going to like the Christian music bookstore or whatever, by my house in when I lived in Mission Viejo, California. And it was like, oh, if you like, you know, Slayer, you're going to love Living Sacrifice. Or if you like Green Day, you're going to love MXPX. And knowing both of all those bands, for instance, I was like, I mean, I don't really think that Living Sacrifice sounds like Slayer. It's different, you know, like, but it was just a way to try to get kids to listen to stuff that wasn't, you know, that wasn't freaking their parents out or something. But I don't know. I definitely think in the Christian metal world, I mean, to me, that's been the most exciting thing overall in the aughts and into the 2010s, you know?
Yeah.
Like, dude, Demon Hunter's still making rad records, you know? And I know Ryan Clark is just such a talented, amazing writer. And he's always kind of one of those dudes. I think that's why we got along so well. So he's always looking forward. And, you know, and him being a graphic designer, he's not going to keep repeating himself doing design. So why keep repeating yourself doing music, you know? And there's not a lot of bands out there that can maintain the same sound forever and really be successful at it. Like some can, like AC/DC, like every record pretty much sounds like AC/DC, you know?
Yeah.
But it worked, you know, the Ramones, same thing, you know, but evolution in music is a good thing, you know? And I think that's a lot of times where Christian music can kind of lack is it doesn't really evolve as much as other genres, you know, and other artists and stuff. I mean, shoot, the Beatles didn't just write, you know, I Want to Hold Your Hand 8,500 times, you know, they evolved and eventually made a record called Let It Be or, you know, the White Album and all that stuff and became almost a different band, but it was exciting and new and refreshing. And I don't know, that's kind of one of my hopes. I mean, shoot, I'm happy to be from, you kind of have cut my teeth in that world. And I hope it becomes kind of exciting again, because it really was in a really exciting time, you know, for probably a good 10 to 15 years, at least from my perspective. You know, it'd be great if we got back to that, you know, I would love it.
But there's only been one Supertones.
It's true.
Let's put it that way. I mean, even with bands like Five Iron Frenzy, like they've got what they've got. And yeah, it's a version of ska, but it, you know, there's never really been something that's been purely what you guys created, especially in those early aughts.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think I would, you know, say that the Supertones probably and Five Iron too, like no, don't really sounded like us, I guess, you know, like, of course, like musically in the Supertones, it's like there were, especially in California, there was tons of ska bands that had a similar sound and stuff like that. But, you know, with Mojo or Singer kind of doing the rap thing and that wasn't, yeah. And that was kind of pre Limp Bizkit and all that crap, you know, that just ended up dominating the radio and MTV and stuff. You know, Mojo was just, you know, he grew up in Long Island and then moved to California and was just a huge fan of rap and hip hop and threw that into ska music and kind of created this, his own thing, you know, and, some people liked it, some people did not, whatever, but, you know, and I think Five Iron too. I mean, like, I recently was on Reese and Joe actually from the Insiders, their podcast. I don't think that's out yet, but, yeah. And even just like, you know, after I did their show, I was like going back and listening to some Five Iron stuff. And I was like, man, Reese just doesn't sound like anybody. Like,
yeah.
You know, you get in like the pop punk world. There's a lot of singers that sound the same or like, you know, like early aughts, like emo, post hardcore, whatever genre you want to call it. A lot of that stuff really is singers start to sound the same. You know, there's like a singing style that becomes popular. Same thing with, you know, what happened with Pearl Jam and stuff like that. People started singing that kind of voice. And, but yeah, someone like Reese, I could not tell you one singer on this planet that sounds like him.
Yeah. No, I call it the Freddie Mercury conundrum. Like, you know, Freddie, the second you hear it, the same with Reese, the same with Mojo and you know, a handful of others, at least from that period. And I think once, you know, similar to what we're talking about, once it became this commodity to emulate, then we sort of lost individuality.
Yeah, totally. I mean, and sometimes that formula can work, you know, and it's like, okay, a couple of these bands sound similar, you know, whatever, but you know, I think when it can work is when the songs are just undeniably good. And the songwriting is that top quality, then it's like, okay, yeah, he kind of sounds like so-and-so, but damn, this is a good song, you know, or a good record.
Yeah. And it's saying something, you know, that's what I always loved about the stuff that you were involved with. It was always very provocative. It was always, you know, prophetic to a degree to the church, to the people who were consuming it, mm-hmm. which I really appreciated.
Well, a lot of the content, that's all Mojo. I mean, he wrote all the lyrics, you know, and he's a very, very smart dude, very smart. And, even after the band was done and, you know, shoot, in probably his, I guess we'd have been in his early 30s, mid 30s, you know, he stopped everything and went and did 2 years of seminary in St. Louis, you know, now he runs his own church, you know.
Oh, it's crazy.
Yeah, he's a very, very intelligent dude, man. You know, especially if you listen to some of the lyrics on the last record that the band did, but the first time we broke up when we did this record called Revenge, I mean, he's got some awesome lyrics on there. They're like, when he was recording them, I was like, I have no idea what he was talking about at all. Like, he's so deep into theology and stuff. It's like, I mean, if there was a Jeopardy theology edition, he'd probably be the Ken Jennings of it. So.
It's fantastic. Well, dude, I've really enjoyed our conversation. As we sort of wrap it up, you know, the church is all over the place on so many issues. Mm-hmm. It definitely is a fractured organism, if we want to call it that. If there was something that you would suggest from your perspective, given your life experience and being involved with the music scene, if there was something that you would recommend to the church to at least take one step to moving in a better direction, what would that be?
Oh my gosh.
You know, a simple question.
Yeah, man, this doesn't open it up to all sorts of subjects.
Yeah, not at all.
Oh, dude, man. Well, I don't know. I'll start by saying this. I mean, I recently reposted a friend of mine. Her and her wife, obviously they are together and they are lesbians. They're really, really close friends of me and my wife's. And she had posted something like for Pride Month, and I thought it was just really, really beautifully well written and stuff like that. So I just reposted it as a story on Instagram or whatever, just to support my friend and stuff like that. And I immediately got a couple of messages, you know, from people that are maybe just like old school fans and, of the Supertones or whatever, or just maybe in the Christian music industry in general. But, immediately was like, are you still a Christian? I'm like, here we go. Here it comes. And I just, you know, my response is yes, but I don't think in the same way you call yourself a Christian. I think it's very different. You know, I don't know. And I guess to answer your question is, you know, I just think that the church lacks so much love nowadays, you know, just love and compassion. And I think a lot of, you know, when people often talk about like, you know, well, if Jesus was here, blah, blah, blah. It's like, I think if Jesus was here right now, he'd be pretty bummed. You know, I mean, the way that, you know, his own children are treated by, you know, by the church, you know, is really, can be very upsetting, you know? And I've seen that stuff firsthand, you know, growing up in the church and stuff like that. And, I think the older I get and the more diverse my friend group gets, the more my world is like opened up and I feel like I've been more educated and, you know, to hear directly from somebody who, let's say, is gay, you know, for instance, to actually sit down and talk to somebody, have a conversation about it without the intention of changing them, I think the church has a hard time doing. Because a lot of people and people I've known personally, you know, have gone into situations like that. Oh, I'm going to change this person. We're going to convert them or whatever, you know. And I think the church just lacks with the things I just said, and also just listening. You know, I don't think a lot of the church and just evangelicals in general like want to listen. You know, it's like they're set in stone with what they have and what they believe and you know, and their opinions of other people, and that's it. You know, it sucks. And I was growing up in church and I was taught that like, oh, this is wrong. This is wrong. This is wrong. This is right. This is right. This is right. So I kind of went into life, you know, as a touring musician with certain things in my head, you know, and kind of, you know, very ignorantly. And yeah, I mean, the more I just got a different friend group, not different as in my other friends are gone, but just, you know, just started meeting more people from different walks of life, you know, different ethnicities, whether it's someone from the, you know, LGBT community or someone from the Black community or whatever, you know, hearing people's stories and just listening and, you know, empathizing, you know, is a good thing. And you can learn a lot, and especially about love. And then, you know, not only loving that person, but loving yourself. And, I don't know, man, I could ramble on and on about it, but you know, I just, yeah, I guess that's all I got to say about that, man. I just wish the church would just listen more and love more, because I don't see a ton of it, you know. And there are great people out there that are doing it, you know. I've definitely become way more progressive the older I get, you know, which is kind of the opposite of what my parents did. they were like pot smoking hippies for early part of my life, and then they got really conservative, you know. So I guess that's how I can end that, is I just, yeah, more love, more listening, you know, more compassion. You know, more care for people.
Yeah, man, definitely. And it's a great perspective. And thanks for sharing that. If people wanted to find you online, they wanted to connect with the music, tell us about the podcast, tell us how we can connect with you online.
Yeah, man, there's a bunch. So the main podcast I do is called Metal Up Your Podcast. It's an all Metallica podcast that I do with my really good friend, Clint Wells, who another touring musician who's played with a bunch of cool artists. And yeah, we do that. We do episodes every single Monday. If you don't like Metallica, you probably won't care for it. I mean, just put it that way. It's real deep. We've done like 237 episodes. And then, you know, just on social media, you know, luckily I've got a unique name. So it's just at Ethan Luck on Twitter, Instagram. I think Facebook is Ethan Luck Music, but I'm not really on Facebook that much anyways. Instagram is where I'm probably most active if you want to keep up with what I'm doing, stuff like that. I do have a Kickstarter going right now to finish the final few processes of my instrumental record. If anyone wants to check that out, you know, there's a link to that on my Instagram page. All my music is on Spotify and Apple Music, iTunes, Amazon, wherever you get digital music, it's there. You can find it. And I got, a whole bunch of stuff out there, just different kinds of music. You know, like I said, I did a reggae record, did like a punk record, did whatever, you know. So if you want to check it out, that's great.
Yeah, man, we'll throw it in the show notes. But again, thank you for being on the show.
Yeah, man, my pleasure.
And that wraps up this episode of Dismantle Podcast. Until next time, don't complain about the things you're not willing to change.
That's a good tagline.